T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Ron Coomer in studio in 40 minutes. Jim Miller in an hour. It is the Spiegel and Parkin Show. This segment is brought to you by Ford. Tune in every Monday to Build Ford Tough Bears Monday, brought to you by your local Ford stores. We will get back to the Bears momentarily, but Jay Zawoski sporting a very stylish Under Armour Notre Dame hoodie today.
Wake up the echoes!
Coming in like, hey, are we gonna pretend like this team exists yet? Talking a little junk, Jay Zawoski, about your Irish.
Oh, people on the station don't like to talk about them because they're not fans. So you just choose to ignore them. We'll just keep talking about Michigan, even though they've proven to suck over and over and over again.
Who are you talking about? Hub went there.
I'm talking about Jason Goff.
Yeah, Jason loves
quite frankly.
Them. Yeah, right.
Okay. You know, his and now Michigan's ducking Notre Dame. They're not playing him every year anymore because they want to get another win in their schedule, and God knows they need it. But Notre Dame has one loss this year to Georgia by 1 point.
It's a good team, Georgia.
Yeah, they just beat the crap out of USC 49-14. It was not even close. It was not that close.
5 straight wins for Notre Dame of 20 yards or more.
Points.
20 points or more. Yeah, certainly more than 20 yards.
They probably had 20 yards more than the opposition.
Josh Adams is going to start getting Heisman buzz, I would imagine. He won't win, but he's gonna start getting Heisman buzz. He's got like 8 plays of 50 yards or more or something absurd this year. He's the fastest Notre Dame player because I grew up kind of a fan of Notre Dame. My dad would take me to a game every year because there was no college sports in the area, and we just liked going to big games.
So I'd
go to one game a year.
I think they are, you know, if you had to pick one, they are probably the Chicago college football team with the most fans here. It's very split.
I would think it's them or Iowa. I don't even know if U of I even qualifies here.
I don't think that's true. I just think that Illinois has been so bad and so irrelevant
for so long.
And Iowa's been so steadily good for so long that it's tilted that perception.
I've said for a long time that we do not cover Notre Dame on the station enough because most of the hosts are Northside based. Just how it worked out. There is a huge contingent of Notre Dame fans on the South Side. Enormous.
All right. Well, so I do watch. I love college football. Is Josh Adams the fastest Notre Dame skill position player since Will Fuller?
Yeah.
Or do you go further
back? Well, it
hasn't
been that long. Will Fuller was incredibly fast, and he would make miraculous catches and then drop ones that hit him in the chest. That was the Will Fuller.
Right, but Adams might be faster than him. And if you go back beyond Fuller, you've got to go back kind of far. Like, this Josh Adams kid is unbelievably, like, he's the type of kid, he could play anywhere.
The breakaway speed is something I haven't seen in Notre Dame in a long time.
Exactly. He could play on Ohio State, he could play on Clemson, he could play on Bama. Like, he is as fast as any player who's a skill position player in the country. And what I wonder for them is, because obviously no conference title game, obviously, and they have one loss, and it is to Georgia, who is still undefeated. Like, if Georgia's one loss comes in the SEC title game to Bama, you probably have to have Georgia ranked above Notre Dame because Georgia beat them head-to-head, even though their one loss would come really late. A one-loss Clemson team as an ACC champ definitely gets into the playoff over Notre Dame, being in the title game the last 2 years. I would think a one-loss Ohio State team gets into the playoff over a one-loss Notre Dame team.
Now, hold on, though, because a one-loss Notre Dame team would mean that they won games still upcoming at Miami, who's number 8 right now,
yep,
and at Stanford, who's number 20 right now. So you're going to have those added in if they're a one-loss team.
Right, but Ohio State has the Big Ten title game, so they, in theory, get Wisconsin, and they still have the, what? Which big game does Ohio State still have left? They still have the Michigan game left, right? Or do they have the Penn State game? I'm mixing up their schedule. They have the Michigan game left. I don't have it in front of me. But TCU, I think if TCU loses, and then Notre Dame clearly gets in over a one-loss Big 12 team.
Ohio State plays Penn State Saturday.
Okay.
And then they end the season at Michigan.
Okay, so they have all of them.
You guys
left.
Are just discounting the Illinois game that Ohio State has on November 18th?
Yes, we are.
Just moving right past it?
But I will say, as a Notre Dame fan, the unexpected loss is coming because it happens every year. NC State's ranked. They'll win that. They'll beat Miami. They'll beat Stanford, but they'll lose to either Wake Forest or Navy. That's the Notre Dame way. But okay. Georgia also has a stupid loss coming, too.
Georgia should have a dumb loss coming. It feels like they should. And I think that Bama will destroy them in the SEC title game. So maybe that helps you, like, if they lose by 30 or something like that. But I think it's going to be – I think – be excited – though Brian Kelly's probably saving his job right now, so maybe don't be too excited about that. But I will be very surprised if a one-loss Notre Dame team finds its way into this playoff, personally.
You're probably right. I mean, they probably do everything they can to make it work, but you've got to have a valid argument. But you wonder, I mean...
Bama, Ohio State,
I'm just trying to
Clemson.
Figure out a way, and it's not... Mathematically, it's not working out for them very well.
Right. A one-loss Big Ten title-winning team gets in over.
A lot of textures screaming for the Northwestern love. Chicago's Big Ten team.
Chicago's Big Ten team.
Where are you guys? I like this one. Northwestern, you're all going to end up working for us anyway.
There you go.
Notre Dame is a wannabe.
That's good.
And NC State is ranked two. You've got three kind of... You got three games of note here for Notre Dame that could change the calculus by the end of the year.
They kicked the crap out of USC. It was
not close. It was a beating.
I always love watching just speed in college football because there's so many teams, like you can really tell a discrepancy there. There's not supposed to be that type of like athletic difference between USC and Notre Dame.
No.
And Notre Dame was running past them all over the place, all over the field. Speaking of a guy running past people, Eddie Jackson for the Bears.
It's the Eddie Jackson game.
It really is.
A year to the day of the broken leg at Alabama. He is the story of that game yesterday, more so than Mitch, more so than Dowell, more so than John Fox. It's Eddie Jackson's day.
Yeah, it was the excitement of having a player at every level of the defense that you like, right? If you say Akeem Hicks, that's a foundational player on the defensive line. Leonard Floyd, he's not there yet.
He's getting there, though.
Exactly.
There's a lot of – the athleticism was on display yesterday.
And then you have Eddie Jackson in the back end, mm-hmm. as all guys, you know, okay, Akeem Hicks is here, Floyd drafted by Ryan Pace, Eddie Jackson drafted by Ryan Pace. You're going to start talking yourself into this team is building in the direction of being something sooner rather than later.
And Kyle Fuller, you might go try and talk to Kyle Fuller, but he's not going to talk to you, is he? He's just going to wait till year's end and say, give me that AJ Bouye money, let's go.
He'd be a fool to sign in season, I would think. You didn't pick up my fifth year option. I'm hitting free agency. That is a position too in the NFL that always gets overpaid.
Seriously,
there's I remember one time when Aqib Talib was a free agent.
Aqib Talib, he gets inside of my head.
There were like seven other corners who hit the market at the same time, and it drove down their value, and all of them signed like a little bit cheaper than they should have.
But I was surprised to see Prince and Mukamura only get the 1 year deal, but that's because of availability issues.
Right. But normally there's like one or two cornerbacks that'll set the market, make huge money. This last year it was Gilmore, and then Bouye was behind him. A couple years ago, remember Brandon Carr was the only free agent cornerback on the market. He got like a $50 million deal. So Kyle Fuller, he's not going to get that, but Kyle Fuller will get paid this offseason. Let's go to Riles. Riles, you're on the score.
So thanks for taking my call. Before I get to my football thoughts, can I tell you how much I appreciated your work with Madden this year? You asked him good questions all year, even when he got salty with you. I think you did a really good job. And next year, if he re-ups again with the score and you get him again, ask him if he's got any memories of Peoria. Because, you know, he's kind of a renaissance guy, man for all seasons. He probably has some good stories about Peoria.
I bet he does. He coached down there long, long, long ago.
Yes, he did. Oh, anyway, what I wanted to bring up, you guys were just starting to talk about Jackson. Attaboy to him for when he got that interception. You could appreciate on TV how he was running like a sprinter, running as fast as he could, looking him back to see if anybody was going to catch up with him, which is completely different from the other Jamoke from the Bears who slowed down towards the end zone, look at me.
Marcus Cooper.
Ball stripped away. Yeah, mm-hmm. Thanks, Bill. That's what I have to say.
Eddie Jackson.
Appreciate the call.
Eddie Jackson is a runner. That is a natural returner. And you saw it there in the hands to scoop and score, and in the vision and the moves to get it done. That's very fun to see.
Yeah, it's one of the most fun positions to root for on the field. Because it's like, oh, you get the ball in there and you just get this ball hawking safety. Is he going to level a hit? Is he going to get the ball in his hands?
That's why I dreamed of Malik Hooker.
Right.
Kept talking about Malik Hooker leading up to the draft. And here you go with Eddie Jackson, a guy coming off the injury and quite a find.
And that was a nasty injury yesterday.
Yes, it was for Malik Hooker. It's a weird day in the NFL, too, by the way.
They all are. They all are. I mean, seriously, 2 weeks ago, what, underdogs go like 11-2 or something ridiculous against the spread. Yesterday, favorites crush it. There's huge, devastating injuries every single week.
Seven teams did not score a touchdown on offense yesterday. That is the most on a single day since December of 2001. So it's seven teams didn't score a touchdown on offense. Were the Bears the only ones to win? No, because Tennessee won, right? Tennessee
won in overtime.
They were a
12-9. 12-9. My guy, Ryan Suckup.
And just remember, Ryan's your guy, Ryan Suckup, yeah?
Yeah, he's my buddy.
Your dude?
Yeah, I mean, buddy.
You guys are tight?
Mr. Irrelevant.
Former chief.
And, you know, he was a pickle player legend on the Kansas City show.
Could you get us Ryan Suckup on this show?
No
Danny?
Question.
Oh, man.
No question I could get you Ryan Suckup. He accepted my ALS Ice Bucket Challenge. Fun fact.
Fun is a
cool.
Yeah,
cool.
It's not necessarily.
Cool. I'll hit it on myself, Campy.
Yeah,
don't you worry
you.
About it.
That was
it,
a little delayed, actually.
No, I'll do it again.
Cool.
I don't know if I go fun as the fact descriptor right there, but we could always be Cleveland. Hugh Jackson, that guy has a huge accent. It's just freaking enormous. He's 1-22 with the Browns, and he's now rotating three young quarterbacks. He had Hogan in there, then Hogan was inactive, then he brought Kizer back, and then Cody Kessler comes in there as he benches Kizer again yesterday.
Did you see the little off-field controversy in Cleveland? DeShone Kizer, Friday night into Saturday morning.
Oh, yes.
Spotted at a bar at 1 a.m., and apparently Hugh Jackson, not too happy. DeShone Kizer says, I'm not here to talk about my personal life with you guys. I feel like Friday night into Saturday morning, that should not be a problem. He's not publicly drunk. He's doing anything wrong. He's 21 years old. He's out at 1 a.m.
No, I didn't see the specific details, but is 1 a.m. and seemingly publicly not drunk different than aging veteran at 4 a.m. who's definitely had a few and everybody could tell? Let me ask you if that's different for you, because that was Lance Briggs 2 years ago on a Friday night, but it was like 4 a.m. Clearly it had a few and was an aging vet trying to hold on. And I, among many others, went after him.
You did?
Yep.
Two nights before a game?
Mm-hmm.
I think that shows a lack of understanding of what these guys do all the time.
Patrick Manley was with me and was on him as well. Just because in that situation for your body, as you are fighting Father Time and trying to hold on, that feels like a different thing.
I guess I don't expect people to like it. But I feel like if you are surprised by it, you are being very naive. Like, the idea that would be punishable, to me, just strikes me as absurd. They have curfew the night before a game, not two nights before a game.
Mm-hmm.
He's an adult. He doesn't have work the next day. I just find that to be completely an unreasonable controversy.
I understand.
To find himself.
I think situationally, depending on who you are, I suppose I could see it. But 1 a.m. is different than 4 a.m. I think that's different.
Yeah, 1 a.m. is – and by the way, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I know that DeShone Kizer was sober. He's out at a bar at 1 a.m. But again, it's two nights before a game.
And it's 3 hours different, just to clarify.
Oh, good point by you.
Something Hugh Jackson did yesterday, just real quick. Did you see this? The opening drive, Tennessee was facing a 3rd-and-1 at the Cleveland 32, and they had a 15-yard face mask penalty to Tennessee. And instead of accepting that to push the Titans out of field goal range, Hugh Jackson declined it, made the Titans go for it on 4th down. And his defense jumped off sides.
Solid.
They're getting ready to fire Hugh and maybe have another organizational reboot. They are in freaking chaos.
Future Bears offensive coordinator Hugh Jackson.
That's right. Hey, Campy, that's who you want. A lot of people texting in saying one loss Clemson over one loss Notre Dame. Just prepare yourself for that disappointment right now if you're a Notre Dame fan. Clemson's been in the title game 2 years in a row, the defending champ, and they'll have the ACC championship game.
Do you think
so? They'll have an extra chance at a win.
They lost to Syracuse, though. Does that mean anything?
It'll be debated. Absolutely.
Do you think the inclusion of Notre Dame a few years back, and then the fact that they laid just a massive egg, has an effect on the committee. I mean, if I was sitting in that room, I'd be, you know, I'd think about it a little bit, just how much they were destroyed then.
Notre Dame is money.
Dame
is eyeballs. Notre Dame is money.
And that's what was said then.
Yeah.
That's what was said then.
Right. So maybe push comes to shove, that helps them. But I'd be very surprised, because I think the best thing for college football would still be Clemson, Bama 3. So that's a tiebreaker. I don't see Notre Dame winning. You want to talk me into some of the other tiebreakers? Cool. But I'd be very surprised if Notre Dame won that one. We got your calls. I think we're doing voicemails 11 o'clock hour today. Jim Miller at 11, Big Cat at noon. We got Ron Coomer coming up the end of the hour.
Let me ask you something. I'm looking, as I always do, at the snap counts on the offense. I want you to guess where Tariq Cohen was of the, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 different position players, skill players,
okay,
took snaps. Where's Tariq Cohen on that list from yesterday's game? 12 different skill position guys took snaps. Where is Tariq Cohen in terms of percentage of snaps on that list? Because, and you heard it yesterday, he's their best playmaker. That's what Dowell Loggins had told them. Then you saw him go deep, catch the 70-yard pass. How many other times did you see Tariq Cohen yesterday?
All right, I will consider it for the entirety of this commercial break and give you my answer next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It's Spiegel and Parkins on The Score, 15 minutes from Ron Coomer, brought to you by Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer. Not knowing the difference between a cold and the flu can be frightening. But with the Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer this Halloween season, you won't be tricked by any spooky symptoms.
Going to talk to Ron Coomer at some point this hour in person about the Cubs coaching stuff.
15 minutes, I just said that.
You did?
Yeah, 10:40.
All right, 10:40. If you didn't hear Danny say it, hear it now.
You're my guy. He's looking like, why are you making that face at Campy?
That's why.
Doing two shows here.
Uh-huh.
One for the audience,
no,
one for
no.
Spiegel.
I like both the shows.
Thank you.
You know what? I'm going to start listening to both of them.
You should. So, on the TuneIn app.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a way to do it. Sorry about that.
It's okay, buddy.
So, percentage of snaps played. The Bears had 38 snaps on offense. 38. You know how many snaps the...
That's the inverse of 83.
Yeah, well, good call. 38 Nation, is that something we're going to do?
I hope not.
Yeah. 72 snaps for the Carolina Panthers, 38 snaps for the Bears.
It's hard to win a game getting doubled up in offensive snaps. And what did it finish time of possession?
Oh, man, that was brutal. At halftime, it was 21-7.
Panthers had over 38 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So almost 2-1
yeah.
minutes.
All those three and outs added up to even it.
Funny
even
how that works.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
So look.
Run, pass.
The offensive line all played 100% of the snaps. No injuries there. Trubisky, 100% of the snaps. And then there are 11 other skill position guys. So out of the 12 skill position guys, where's Tariq Cohen on this list in terms of snaps?
All right, well, let me give you the locks as being in front of him.
Okay, Trubisky is one, obviously.
Well, Trubisky is one, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan Howard, clearly more.
34 snaps, 89%.
Tanner Gentry, clearly more.
33 snaps, 87% for the number one wide receiver on this team, Tanner Gentry.
Zach Miller, clearly more.
25 snaps, 66%.
Deion Sims, clearly more.
29 snaps, 76%. Still looking for Tariq Cohen.
Kendall Wright?
Kendall Wright had 8 snaps, 21%. That's more than Tariq Cohen.
Wow, okay. Trey McBride.
Had 20 snaps, 53% for him.
So your starting wide receivers at this point are very clearly Tanner Gentry and Trey McBride.
That's 2 weeks in a row they've dominated in terms of snaps over the slot guy, Kendall Wright.
I'm missing another one in front of Tariq Cohen?
Two more. Adam Shaheen had 19 snaps.
How about that?
Made a couple of big blocks. The one on Jarius Byrd was a thing of beauty.
Yep.
19 snaps, 50%. And then Burton.
The fullback.
The fullback, 11 snaps, 29%. Then Kendall Wright. Then Tariq Cohen.
Wow.
Ahead of only Josh Bellamy and the Benny Cunningham replacement, Mizell.
How many snaps did Bellamy get?
Josh Bellamy got 3.
But a guy tweeted me and said, for just one day, I would love to walk around knowing what it's like to have the irrational confidence of Josh Bellamy. And that really made me laugh. The guy is like, he's a wide receiver. He can't really crack it on this team with no wide receivers. And he's just walking around
when he
on a sweat.
When he covers the punt, Yeah, like he had a lot of swag on the punt coverage. You need him without Sherrick McManus.
Heck yeah, man.
How does Tariq Cohen only get on the field for 7 snaps in a game
when one of them's a 70-yarder?
And he is your self-proclaimed best playmaker. They're the ones who said that
right
all week long.
It's almost like they're trying not to make plays. It's a conspiracy. I don't know. That's weird. I would have guessed more for Tariq Cohen.
It's crazy to me. 7 snaps. I mean, I guess they didn't have any plays, right?
They didn't run a lot of plays.
Run Jordan Howard, throw an incompletion, and punt.
Or take a sack. So many of the – we should go through and look at that. How many times did they start a drive, run, pass, attempt? Whether he threw the ball, completed it, threw the ball, incomplete it, or took a sack. Because it did seem like it was always run, pass, attempt.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess that would keep Tariq Cohen on the sidelines a decent amount.
If you don't have him on there for the pass attempt, or even if you do. Even if you do, that's not that many plays. I mean, that's crazy to me. I mean, Jordan Howard is a load back and had many moments where he looked like himself yesterday. But I think Tariq Cohen needs to be on the field for more than 7 snaps.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Guys telling me 4 of the 9 drives for the Bears started run. So almost 50%. Only 9 offensive drives.
Yeah, man.
In a game you win.
This
tough to do.
This style of play, Texter is wondering, can you guys talk about how this style of play is going to hold Mitch back and why we need this stale offense to open up? We talked about it a lot in hour number 1, and we'll talk about it with Jim Miller, our quarterback guru at 11. They're trying to serve multiple masters here. They're trying to win games and play it absurdly safe with a great defense. And at a certain point, it will become the kind of thing that frightens me in terms of, you know, scaring the aggressiveness out of a self-proclaimed gunslinger. I'm not going to freak out about it yet, but there will be a point where if it keeps being like this, I'm like, my goodness, let the man learn how to play quarterback. But I guess he is learning things, right? I
mean, he's absolutely learning. He's learning how to throw the ball away and not force the ball into an interception. Take a sack instead of forcing an interception. Mm-hmm. How to run out of clock. You know, they had 5 first down yesterdays. Two of them happened on the last drive. He
still had a bad delay of game, which is something he's still learning to work
right,
for.
Exactly. Just getting in and out of huddle, making play calls, checking plays at the line of scrimmage.
For sure. Successfully handing off the ball from the shotgun and otherwise.
Yeah, there are things to learn.
Speaking of delay of games or clock management, did you see Matt Ryan at the end of the third quarter yesterday?
I did against
the Pats.
That was a weird game last night.
The Falcons are oddly broken. I mean, against that defense, and they've done it now a few weeks in a row, but at that moment there's like 33 seconds left and 30 seconds on the play clock, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he, or the other way around,
right?
He doesn't get a playoff to, and before the third quarter, they're down 21-0. Doesn't get a playoff. They have to go down and then ends up calling a timeout using one of their 3 timeouts in the first 10 seconds of the fourth quarter.
I think coaching matters in football more arguably than all the other sports combined. There's such an impact. There's so much game specific planning for your opponent and all that.
Mm.
Their offense is completely broken with Sarkisian. It's completely broken. Lost Shanahan, hired Sarkisian, and they don't know what to do anymore. Like, I don't understand. We saw the same thing against the Bears. It's like, why aren't you testing this Bears secondary?
Right. Why wouldn't they doing that against the Pats?
Why aren't you doing it against the worst secondary in the NFL? Like, it's bizarre what's happening to Atlanta's offense.
I agree. And there was also a moment on that drive that I'm talking about, the beginning of the fourth quarter, Julio Jones was open going across the field and Ryan underthrew him and it was broken up by Malcolm Butler. So Matt Ryan's making some errors on top of that stuff. But yeah, the Sarkisian thing is it's just very weird. They're totally out of rhythm.
We can maybe talk about this a little bit more later. I would not be surprised if Jay Cutler's career is over.
Oh yeah, that's what you meant.
Breaks his ribs out probably a couple of weeks, according to some reports, maybe 2 games or so. They put in Matt Moore and he scores 2 touchdown drives in the last 12 minutes of the game, and they come back and beat the Jets. They're now 4-2. They're playing for something. So assuming that Matt Moore leads the Dolphins offense to look better than Jay Cutler, which it's practically impossible to have them look worse, I don't know why you would go back to Jay Cutler, assuming the offense is better and they actually have a chance to win in the AFC East. So And then I would assume that Jay Cutler doesn't play again next year. He got his $10 million, and then he can go and sit with Kevin Burkhardt next year.
If they let him, yeah.
If they'll have him back. That would be my guess. Also, the Washington Post is reporting that the Nationals have reached out to Davey Martinez about replacing Dusty Baker as manager.
Man, the Nationals are about to have their sixth manager in 10 years. Sixth manager in 10 years.
That's crazy.
Bryce Harper's about to have his fourth manager. He's 25 years old. It's this that organization, man. I was talking to somebody last week about their ownership. They've got like 7 or 8 different components of their ownership, and they argue about everything and disagree with each other, and that's why they're in such chaos on so many things. But if they're blaming Dusty for the Strasburg stuff, that's not fair.
It's a tough firing for Dusty. That's a tough one. Like, I know his reputation precedes him, but I didn't really feel like that was on Dusty
Baker.
Me neither. Jim Miller at 11. Ron Coomer is in studio. We're going to talk to him about the relationship between players and their coaches and look ahead to what's facing the Cubs this offseason. Ron Coomer next on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
That's Chris Bosio with Mully and Hanley in his last appearance, now maybe ever. On the Score, that he's been fired. We'll see if he comes back on. We got Jim Miller in 20 minutes. We'll play your Bears voicemails in an hour. But Ron Coomer joining us in studio. The segment brought to you by Amazon. Your chance to start earning extra money begins now. Apply to be a part-time associate in Crest Hill at amazon.com/JolietJobs. Amazon is an equal opportunity employer.
Interesting to hear Bosio say, yeah, I think we'll all be back.
Yeah.
Right?
He was wrong.
And you also heard Theo say, Joe will have all the coaches that he wants to come back. And what they did was not pick up Bosio's option. So not technically a firing, but, you know, same kind of thing. And so Ron Coomer, who joins us now in studio, that means all signs point to Joe Maddon saying, you know what, I think it's time.
Yeah, it's, you know, obviously it was time for a change for Joe. He wanted to make a move, and he did. It's
surprise you?
A little bit, you know, especially with the success the team has had. But, you know, there's certain situations that, even though, you know, we were just talking off the air, how well the Cubs have done in the last 3 years. You know, if you look at Cubs history as opposed to what they're doing now, we're all bummed out and disappointed, but pretty good. And you don't see a lot of changes. But, you know, there might be that situation for Joe where, you know, you want to make a specific change on how a specific thing is handled that obviously, you know, ranks up there really high with him, and that's probably why they're firing.
You mean a specific pitching skill that's handled?
Yeah, whether it's handling people a certain way, whether it's handling young pitchers or veteran pitchers or, you know, whatever that is for Joe. And to be honest with you, I don't know a lot about pitching, nor do I like pitchers all that much.
Yeah, but I can see that.
Yeah, but, you know, I usually when those situations happen, whether it's a hitting coach or a pitching coach, there's something there, one specific or two specific pieces that the manager or the GM doesn't feel comfortable with or doesn't like, and they need to make a move.
I could see them if they hire Bill Hickey,
Jim Hickey,
who Joe has the relationship with, him coming out and saying, this wasn't about Bosio, this is about Hickey.
Just like Renteria and Maddon.
Right, this is just the perfect guy at the perfect time where I wasn't going to make this move, but this guy became available, so I went out and did it. How much does this matter? How much does a hitting coach or a pitching coach truly matter?
I think quite a bit, especially in today's game where there's so much game planning and there's so much information that is available to the coaches to get to the hitters or the pitchers. If you roll back 20 years ago, I would say there's a lot less information. You'd go on one advanced scout giving you info. Now, you know, you've got pages and pages of information, and you get on your computer, and I can get a scouting report on the computer before our games. And so there's a lot of info that has to be digested and put into play. And I think the pitching coaches and the hitting coaches, their job has changed a lot over the years, and I think when you look at that, they have a pretty big impact now on how the game is played on the field with the just planning for who you're facing, whether it's pitching or hitting.
This is why relationships matter so much, because you are communicating a ton, and you gotta have a receptive relationship with the most important guys of all different ages and stripes. Joe Maddon before has referred to Jim Hickey as the Pied Piper because he's communicated with rookies, veterans, and international players exceptionally well. The way he communicates the message to his pitchers makes him as good as he is.
Where are you reading that from?
I'm reading that from Cubs Insider, who wrote up Jim Hickey and the Joe Maddon relationship quite a bit. So you've got
Joe made that statement. He's made that statement
about Hickey even 2 weeks ago when the season ended, when he realized Hickey was going to be available.
He's used those terms. I can remember that being when he first came here. He's, you know, when he's asked that question.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So and you look at the track record down there in Tampa. I'll be shocked if Hickey's not the guy. And I think it's mostly about somebody to communicate that ream of information, those reams of information to the pitchers from the front office.
I was wondering because some guys might have a good relationship with Bosio and then some guys might not. So for some guys, it's a positive. Some guys, it's a negative. And then you were saying, though, it might be a philosophical difference with like a coach and a general manager. This is Joe Maddon's call, right?
It's Joe Maddon's call. Absolutely. Theo was very open about that as you're reading. And, you know, sometimes you got to make calls that aren't popular or tough, just tough decisions. You've gone to battle with this guy and you've done very well. So yeah, it was a tough decision, I'm sure, for Joe.
So what do you want to see most from the Cubs this offseason? What's your offseason shopping list?
Tightening up the bullpen to me would probably be first and foremost. And, you know, I think there were some guys. I think it's going to be kind of a look in the mirror situation for a lot of guys that are even going to be back to make sure that they take the next step. The Montgomerys and some of those guys that you're going to depend on. And they've done very well. It just didn't work out in the playoffs, right? So how you prepare for playing an extra month, I think, is going to be something they're going to address again like they did this past year. But bullpen first. And then I still believe the offense needs guys that can just understand how to put the ball in play and move the ball around and play situational baseball, because there's plenty of guys on the roster that can bang the ball. But you have to, two things. One, and I know John Mailey feels this way, guys have to learn how to put the ball in play and move runners around against really good pitching, and then also be able to bang the baseball. So I think they've got that. Defensively, I don't see there being a big issue with Cubs Club. And then I really think they're going to go out probably first and foremost and get another starting pitcher, because obviously Jake's going to be gone.
You know, the way that Theo talked about the offense, he gave credence to people who have been bringing up the postseason from 2015 in addition to this one. He put all three of them together and said, we need to look and see if there is some kind of pattern here about how we're getting pitched by better pitchers in a smaller sample with more advanced scouting. And they're not sure if there is something specific in that way. But what are you seeing as specifically what changes in terms of going after these guys?
Well, you look at the two Dodger series, the both playoff series and the series in Los Angeles. A lot of punch outs, a lot of high fastballs, a lot of same pattern pitching, and you got very good pitching. So you have to be able to make some adjustments to some of that. And when the Cubs struggled early in the year, it was very similar: high fastball, breaking ball down, sliders to certain guys that were chase guys.
See, I've heard about a little frustration with John Mailey in that way. Have you heard any whiffs of that because of that kind of thing
from the front office or? Maybe. I haven't heard any, but I could understand it. But just from being as close as I am to the team daily and being a hitting guy on top of it, you know, I have a lot of discussions with John about hitting. You know, we're both South Side of Chicago guys. We're, you know, we've been friends a long time. I don't think that's on him, to be quite honest with you. I think there's certain times in your career where you have to make, like I was saying with pitchers, you got to look in the mirror. The hitters could do the same thing. You've got to take accountability for what you're doing. And I think that's, you know, but with that being said, I mean, we're talking about a team that went to the league championship series. So we're, you know, we're talking about finite little adjustments that got to be made to win another World Series. That's, you know, that's kind of where I'm at.
Ron Coomer hanging in studio. We'll talk to Jim Miller in about 10 minutes. You mentioned that, and it makes all the sense in the world. Like, put the ball in play, situational baseball, that sort of thing. But we could want it, but the league is home runs. It's home runs and strikeouts right now, right? That's the state of baseball. Do you think that there's a switch that can be flipped come playoff time? Because that's one of the arguments, is that in the postseason against the good pitchers, you're not going to be able to rely on the home runs, and you got to put the ball in play. Like, is that something that they could, like, this collection of talent, the Cubs are going to hit a home runs next year?
They're going to be a power hitting team. There's no doubt about it. But there has to be, you know, it was really glaring last year in the playoffs when Ben Zobrist was at the plate and doing some of the things that Zoe did to advance runners, get a base hit, and not be a punch-out guy. That was really glaring from the year before when the Cubs faced New York and got blown away, right? So if you add a piece or two, that it doesn't even have to be an everyday player. They don't have to play and get 600 at-bats. But you've got to be able to inject those guys, like Joe did this year with Tommy LaStella. All of a sudden, LaStella played for a week and a half when the offense was scuffling, and all of a sudden, you start getting, you know, things start working out. Well, you get guys in situations where they're putting the ball in play. And I think just adding a piece where they, you know, like a John Jay, another piece like that where you have 350 at-bats, you play 3 days a week, and you can really move the ball around against maybe a tough lefty or the dominant right-handed guy.
When you know you're supposed to feel good, and most of you do on a team, about making three straight LCSs, and you're out, you're great. But then that World Series is going to start tomorrow without you. So there's going to be...
Sucks.
Right?
Totally.
You get the combo player. Totally. And I would hope that it sucks. I'd hope that players sit around and go, damn it, man, if we had just shown up a little bit stronger, a little bit better, been less tired or whatever the hell it was, right?
Well, I think everybody's tired. There's not a team in the league that's not exhausted, but the playoffs are also energizing. So you're right. I think that's the great thing about this young group, is it is a young group, and they're, you know, they're hungry, and they played like it, and, you know, it didn't work out. It's kind of the way I look at it. The Dodgers, like the Mets did a couple years ago, were just really hot and a good team.
Check out our live video stream at 670thescore.com, brought to you by Marvel Universe Live at Allstate Arena, November 2nd through the 5th, marveluniverselive.com. You guys were great on the call all year, man. Pat and Ron, was a very fun listen, and I'm sorry you have the week off.
Yeah, me too. We'd like to have been broadcasting, but we appreciate all the help we get from you guys and all the, you know, it's just fun. We've all had, you know, 3 years of really enjoying Cubs baseball, and having you guys, you know, jumping right in with us all is really cool. We've had a lot of fun.
Well, enjoy your off season.
Yeah.
You get some time off.
I do. I am going to play a little golf here soon. We may, you know, just, they have this thing called happy hour too. I'm supposed to go to today that I haven't been to in a long time.
I've seen you there before.
Infrequent. Now I get to do it, you know? Yeah.
They have them every day.
Yeah. That's what they tell me. I don't know.
Have a good one, Ron.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
The concern level and how valid it is of the aggressiveness getting coached out of a quarterback, and what do you make of the quarterback development when he throws seven passes in a game?
How do you figure out what Mitch learned, what we learned as we watched it?
We'll discuss it with Jim Miller. Your voicemail's at 1140 on the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.